My guest today is The Black Watch. MySpace.com/TheBlackWatch. We're going to start by listening to a track from some music that was brought in, and then we'll get into some interview and some live stuff. You know how it's done here on Is Good on killradio.org, so stick around.
Well, the portals are all latched, and the rockets are in flames. The controller's plans are hatched for our venture into space. Traversed inner space, the depths and shallows swell. Have we looked about the place? Sure, as far as I can tell.
We're back on Is Good on killradio.org, and my guest is The Black Watch. John, how's it going?
Very well. Thanks, John.
Thanks for coming in, and why don't we just get right to the heart of the matter. This is a project that you've been doing since 1988,
yeah, I understand. The first record came out on vinyl called St. Valentine. It was myself and three other Santa Barbara musicians where I grew up, Santa Barbara, and then just realized that I wasn't ever really going to be a serious artist in a lazy beachside caddy kind of jewel by the sea. So I moved to Los Angeles about a year later and just found some real people that I summarily got rid of after a short time there as well. But yeah.
Did you start as just sort of a guy, you know, guy with a guitar doing folk songs, and then you made a rock band around that?
When I was 10, I did, yeah. I broke my leg playing football when I was 10 years old, and I had to spend a year in bed. It was that bad. My parents didn't let me watch television for more like than maybe an hour a day. So all I could do was read and play guitar most of the time, you know. So I started writing little songs, patterned after, of course, my heroes like the Beatles and the Monkees and stuff like that. You know, I'm sure they were dreadful, and I'm glad they're lost forever. I still kind of play like a 10-year-old person. So,
Has there been like a tremendous evolution in your sort of style of songwriting from when you first started?
I don't know. I think that it's very heavily influenced by the fact that I read tons and lots of dark poems and light poems as well. So, I mean, I know that my voice has seemingly gotten a shade deeper, perhaps, and I've hopefully...
Since you were 10?
Yeah, since I was 10. No, since the first record, St. Valentine. But, you know, I hope that I've shed some influences and picked, you know, some obvious ones, or, you know, tried to mask them and maybe picked up some new ones to be concerned about or something. I don't know. It's hard to say.
Doing music, especially sort of independently for so long, have you sort of defined the Black Watch sound, or is that something that you've also seen change and grow with your voice?
It's so difficult to say. I mean, especially in the light of the fact that we had a violinist in the band who was, you know, for about 10 years, who's gone on to, I would say bigger, but not necessarily better things. She's in Rod Stewart's band. So she, a woman named Jana Jacoby, played in the band for like 10 years. And because she played violin and she's virtuosic, you know, that when she left, it changed the sound. But she was a great guitarist because she wasn't trained on guitar. We were talking about the notion of, you know, like naivete with guitar. But she's one of my favorite guitar players, you know, barring Tim Boland and Stephen Scheyer, who's in the band now. You know, because she didn't really know what she was doing, so she'd really form very odd chords. So, you know, it's been shaped by the people, you know, that I've played with over the years. But the lineup, you know, except for a recent change, has been pretty stable for the last, since Jana left, since like maybe 97.
It's interesting. I heard an interview with Jack White of the White Stripes talking about how, her name is escaping me at the moment, but the other
Meg.
Stripe. Meg, yeah. How she plays like a little girl. That's what he likes about, you know, that she doesn't really know how to play the drums.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, there's something about sort of like approaching an instrument with a sense of wonderment and awe that almost makes it come out better than if you're like, oh, I'm classically trained. I know exactly what I'm doing.
Yeah, I think virtuosity is a terrible bore. I don't, you know, but it's not to say that I like the shambling kind of band that looks like that you know, they just picked up instruments, you know, maybe 2 weeks ago. I mean, we played in Berkeley last year. We did a little West Coast tour, and we played with this band of charming, charming, lovely girls who I wanted to give them our paltry gig money for lessons, you know, just like, here, take this $20 that we earned, you know, on a horrible Sunday night in Berkeley, and, you know, and put it towards, you know, having somebody, you know, coach you at least how to tune the guitar, you know, whatever.
Yeah. If you're ready, let's jump into a live song.
Okay, sure.
What would you like to play for us?
This is called Après Lisette from the new record, which is called Icing the Snow Queen. That doesn't come out till June, but John's got it on his good.
All right.
This golden apple drawing of a girl who held a bird. Surely now was you who, sort of double portrait, reflexively preserved. Suddenly I knew who, you held in hand the chance to let it fly or keep it from the sky. Marvel at the suspense etched upon the face. The girl is clearly you. Is it the lovely drawing curtain kindly air has made this song ling to who? You held in hand a chance to let it fly, and that to me is romance. Any day now, anyway now. It's alright. Oh, I pray this ends. Oh, I pray this
You're listening to Is Good on killradio.org. My guest is the Black Watch. Great start to the show, man.
Thank you.
We were talking a bit before the show, but you spent some time in England performing and and recording. And just listening to your music, there's definitely... And you had mentioned some of your influences earlier on. There is some
the
sort
unmentionable
of...
unmentionable mentioning of the influences, yeah.
There is some sonic connection to European music, to British music. What do you think it is that resonates with you? That's it's a different kind of songwriting than traditional American music.
A certain dreamy, rainy dreaminess, for one thing. Certainly heavy influence from the '60s, but with a much more droney, dissonant sort of thing. It's odd because I think of all those bands that I admire greatly from the Great Creation era, like My Bloody Valentine or Ride and Lush, 4AD as well, and Cocteau Twins. A number of them were sort of influenced by Dinosaur Jr. or Sonic Youth, and then gave it an Englishy sort of twist, and then it's sort of ricocheted back to the States, as well. So, I would say it's a sensibility more than anything, and a concern with trying to make the lyrics as poetic and dreamy as possible, and disposable, of course, because lyrics aren't really real literature or anything in my estimation. You try to make them really good and then just don't put them on your record somehow on the sleeve. But that's probably it.
Where does
sunniness amidst the dreariness of one's outlook.
Along those lines, where do the lyrics come in terms of the process for you? Like, do you start with the music and then add the lyrics, or
no,
does the song start with an idea?
No, I've never been able to write like that. I'm sorry, I have it in reverse. I've always written like that. I've always written melodies first and then fitted words to them. I've never been the sort of person who fancied himself a poet first and like I have this stuff that I wrote in a cafe with a beret and a cigarette holder or what have you, and I need to find a melody for it. I always have melodies floating around in my head. I have a kind of a musical Tourette's syndrome, like what we were talking about before, where I'll just get something of mine, stuck in my head, mostly probably to keep out other people's songs, atrocities of songs or whatever that you catch somehow. And so I'll just be repeating it ad infinitum, during the day, and then have to go, put something to it. So I'll work like that. But yeah, I write the music first.
What if some of the, thinking of the challenges of having written music for so many years, the big fear is, like I've had a lot of bands come in here who have, only been together for about a year, and they're already freaking out because they're concerned that they're writing the same songs over and over again.
Well, most likely they are, John, and they must be stopped. And
exactly.
And they should quit and get out of the Black Watch's way.
I'm wondering if there's
joking.
Anything that you do, sort of consciously or unconsciously to sort of protect yourself from, being redundant.
I try to make... Icing the Snow Queen is the 13th CD we've done on a number of different little indie labels and one mini major back in 95 called Zero Hour that had $17 million that we didn't really get a big percentage of the $17 million. I try to make the White Album. This is going to sound like among the most pretentious things that you've heard. I try to make the White Album every single time we go into the studio, and I know I fail, and I will fail every time to do that, but that's among my favorite records. That's the kind of paradigm of what I think an album should be. You know, within, not genre hopping or anything, but within one's sort of like aesthetic, try to do a variety of styles and stuff. I mean, when you listen to Icing the Snow Queen, you just got it. You'll find that there's something that's almost country-esque, and there's a Nick Drakey kind of picking thing, and then, you know, maelstroms of dissonance, and then super XTC-ish kind of pop. So we try to do that every single time, and we never succeed, so that therefore we have to make another record.
Right. It's good that you never succeed, because then you never run out of something to aspire to.
Know, all art is a kind of a failure anyway, you know. It's just, I want to make a bumper sticker. Maybe I can supplement my vast income by selling a bumper sticker. Maybe you'll stick it up in this lovely offices of Kill Radio.
If we could find some
fail
room.
Fail beautifully. You know, I think you should always, you know, if you're going to fail, and you are, fail beautifully. I'm sorry if you guys tuned in to get a pep talk this morning. Too late.
Just lost half of my optimistic audience.
Right.
But the cynics are still listening.
Of Razor.
Why don't we listen to another track from Icing the Snow Queen, which, let me just say, is an awesome name for an album.
Thank you, John.
What was the impetus for calling this Icing the Snow Queen?
You know, you're gonna
someone you were upset
that.
With at the
well,
time?
Well, I have this bad habit of putting women I've dated on the covers of records. So there's the latest victim of, I would say victim of me, but I was kind of victimized by her, but, you know, I let myself. Mm. But just because I wanted to write a record about a person and about death as well, because I had to kill her in my memory. Mm-hmm. And, you know, of course, there's a pun, I sing the Snow Queen, as
right.
well as icing the Snow Queen, putting her on ice. And, you know, and she's a lovely girl, but not probably the warmest individual.
not icing
the
cake.
She'll remain anonymous, even though her picture's plastered on the cover, and I adore her still. But, yeah, I thought I would milk a record out of it.
What track should we listen to?
I would say The Love of the Buzz is one that people have written who've got advanced copies said that they absolutely love. Track 5, The Love of the Buzz.
All right, let's do it. You're listening to Is Good on killradio.org. This is The Black Watch. We'll be right back. Today. And we're back on Is Good on killradio.org, hanging out with John of the Black Watch. I guess we could say you're the original founding member.
Yes,
I mean, you are the Black Watch.
Yeah, kind of. Although Scott Taylor, our bass player, has been in the band for the last decade. He's always trying to quit, so, you know. But I won't let him.
Whenever he gets out, pull him back in.
Yeah, yeah. But it's, you know, it's me and my very good friend Steve Shayer has just joined us, who was in a band called Clay Idols, and it was also later in The Chills, the New Zealand Flying Nun band. And then Rick Woodard, who's also in Scott's band Valuria. So it's all very symbiotic, incestuous, you know, just wrong. But yeah, it's you know, I started writing songs a long time ago, as I mentioned, and I'm kind of a singer by default, because it's sort of like I, you know, have in my head how I'd want them to go, and I don't really care to Svengali anybody along anymore. Well, maybe, I don't know, you know, they can apply for that and for Scott's job that he wants to give up. But yeah.
This album is released under Eskimo record label, which is your record label.
Yeah, and yeah.
Tell me about the sort of experience of, you know, working with other people's labels and also releasing your music independently, and sort of the different animals that
presents.
Well, we've
been on five different labels and one in England, five different domestic ones and one in England. And we started off putting out our own records very early on vinyl only, and then have come back to putting out our stuff. And the difference is that, that you're frustrated with somebody else's inability to spend money properly, and then when it's yourself, you're, you know, like hoping to try to budget things yourself, and then you have only you to blame, as it were. So I don't know. I mean, it's everybody seems, there's no stigma involved with it anymore at all. It used to be like, oh, you put it out yourself, like, you know, you're not signed or whatever. We've been signed and dropped so many times, it's not even, you know, you feel like you're a contract and a football at the same time, you know. Drop
well, and,
kicked
and
but
these days
I don't
it's
know.
Almost more impressive to, you know, oh, you put this out yourself.
Well,
you know, wow,
we're
you
working
know.
With we're working with, I'm getting all my plugs in here, our good friend Lenny at Combat Rock Promotions, who does radio for us. I mean, he was just saying, like, look, what, you know, why would you really want to seek out yet another label to give your stuff over to who doesn't have an ad budget or has a minimal one and who can't give you tour support, you know, and even with a major label, like, you're still going to be someone's, you know, potential slave. So why not do what you can, you know, given the, you know, when we're talking about the snow cap thing turning up on our MySpace thing, you know, try and sell stuff that way and milk the fan base and keep as much of the money as you possibly can yourself somehow. So
does it have an effect on the way that you write and produce music, or do you really need to separate the creative from the business?
No. I'm a terrible business person and manager. Yeah, I'm atrocious at that. But it's not willfully. It's not as though I'm trying to be some, you know, uber artist, you know, kind of person who's like, I don't know how to balance a checkbook or tie my shoes. But it's just difficult. But you just do what you can, and it doesn't affect how I write music or release it at all. I mean, it's nothing. We've never consciously tried to have a hit, nor have we ever consciously tried to be
tried
this
to avoid
obscure.
A hit.
Yeah, yeah.
Let's jump into another live song if you're
okay,
ready.
Okay, sure.
Like
this is called Blue Umbrella. I wrote it from when I was teaching in the writing program at USC for about 5 years. And I wrote it for my class, actually, weirdly enough. And it's about trying to inspire people to be better so that I didn't have to read a bunch of crummy papers on Kubrick.
Ready building castles all over northern Spain. Got this blue umbrella to keep you from the rain. Transitory season with wheels of change will spin. If you ever had this feeling, you'll know just what state I'm in. Come on, baby, come on. Come on, baby, come on. Darling, when I met you, the whole foundation shook. And as far as looks go, one was all that took. Make me feel a fool now in the very bestest way. I wonder what you're doing for the next 10,000 days. Oh, come on. Baby, come on. Come on, baby, come on. Come on, baby, come on. Come on, baby, come on and on and on and on. Is one to take this through the roof with a blue umbrella. We both be weatherproof. Might be so easy. Guess you'd have to wait and see. So take this umbrella, hold it over me. Come on, baby, come on. Come on, baby, come on. Come on, baby, come on. Come on, baby, come on and on.
You're listening to Is Good on killradio.org. My guest is The Black Watch. I recognize that song from the album, from Tatterdemalion, which is a great album, by the way, which is...
Thank you, John.
That's already available. You have lots of stuff out there. Where should people go if they want to buy Black Watch music before they get this this new one?
Yeah, CD Baby's a good place. iTunes, we're distributed by Carrot Top out of Chicago, which is a very long-standing, great distributor, and Shell Shock in England. So, you know, mom and pops, it's easy to find. iTunes, Last.fm, I think, sells stuff, or Pandora is another place for those of you people who aren't working hard enough to buy actual CDs but just want to poach songs off things, you know, blast you. Buy the whole record if you can. So those are places right there. But, yeah, CD Baby's a really good bet. As will be this place called TuneCore that's just starting to get some momentum.
And what about getting the latest up-to-date info on the band? Should they go to the MySpace page?
Yeah, the MySpace is the most reliable, the most often updated, myspace.com/theblackwatch. And we like to correspond with people. So, yeah, send us a message or a friend request, and, you know, we'll happily write you something witty or silly back.
And you'll be best friends forever.
Oh, yeah. Forever.
Let's talk a little bit about performing live. I would take it you've had quite a lot of experience performing
Tons.
In different kinds of venues with Tons. Different setups. Let's start with what is sort of, in your mind, the best combination of the, you know, the right number of band members, the right size stage, the right kind of venue for the ultimate Black Watch live performance.
Oh gosh, I don't know. I mean, the band members, it's always four of us, you know, that paradigm of the Beatles. I never want five people. I don't like trios. I never want to just like, and moreover, I can't handle all the guitar work and the singing. So it's always four of us. And, you know, the best scenarios of venues sort of like the Roxy or the Whiskey or the Ventura Theater, you know, or The Echo, where our dear friend Liz Garrow, you know, gets us in opening for people from time to time, or release parties. We've also had really wonderful and successful things at Tex there in Echo Park, right around the corner from where most of us live, because it's free and the sound is decent and you get some French food and they always have the Lakers on, you know, except when you're playing. So, you know, that's just varieties of stuff. Just in stores are always the worst.
In stores
are the worst are Sunday nights in Berkeley with shambling kids that can't play at all. I mean, we've had nightmare gigs beyond where we've rolled up to some place where we were billed as the Black Witch. Maybe they were expecting
and you had all these goth kids. Like...
Or the Backwash is another infamous one as well, you know, and playing to three people and two of them there are the Clarks that work there, you know, or something, or the bartender who's... You know, what have you. So, of course, you know, having been around this long and done many the national tour, many the West Coast tour, the best, I don't know, the most fun we've had recently is going to England. We've been going to England for twice a year for the past 4 years, where people come up after the gig and go, like, what was the third syllable in the second verse? You know, just like they listen really carefully. Yeah. I'm like, I don't know. Are you kidding me? I don't know. Just up there, you know, scatting, you know, like coming up with stuff off the top of my head sometimes. I can't be responsible for it. But, yeah, you know, and everyone buys you a pint and you're completely shellacked by the end of the night and, you know, it's you wake up somewhere, you know, underneath one of the taps. And, you know, yeah.
Do you think there's a different way that your music is perceived there than, you know, Los Angeles is so saturated
absolutely.
With music?
We're heavily, obviously, you know, I wouldn't deny it for a second, very English influenced. You know, I named the band after the Scottish regiment of people who play bagpipes and kill people. But they're we're perceived as Americana there.
I mean, interesting.
People don't, you know, bring up, you know, the House of Love or the Cure or those things that we absolutely, you know, or the Cocteau Twins and, you know, things that I'm mad for or whatever. They want to, you know, talk about, you know, my affection for Dylan because we had a song on an English record called the Dylan, Dylan, Dylan. This off this thing called Hypnotizing Sea. And, you know, I only recently really got into Dylan. It's just sort of like, you know, I had a terrible heartbreaking thing happened and, like, he kind of saved my life. But it's hardly my favorite stuff, you know. I mean, I like way more English artists than I do American ones somehow. So, but they, you know, they think of us as Americana. Like, wow, this is great. You're coming over here with your Americana stuff.
And in terms of performing live and having a good performance, what in your mind, like, what do you gauge as making for a good performance? Is it just the number of people there, or is it the way they respond to the music, or is it your performance itself?
Gosh, John, that's so, you know, like that's such a circumspect, introspective kind of question because I, you know, I love the studio much more than I ever do live, even though we've got a good, you know, record release show set up for June 14th at Tex. Shill. But
you see the live performance as
playing,
kind of a...
I don't love playing live. I fake my way through a lot of it because you can't control a lot of it. I mean, you know, the most wonderful gigs are when it's packed, filled with people, and they're playing along with xylophones and tiaras on their heads. I'm not making this up off the top of my head, but we have passed out xylophones and tiaras before and just, like, crowned everyone and given them a way to interact, you know, talk about your interactive thing. And, you know, any time that we've, you know, played with bigger bands like Swerve Driver or The Church or who else, The Jazz Butcher or what have you, gosh, you know, that's all great to have lots of people there, but it just depends on the scenario. We can have a fantastic gig to 25 people, so.
So you'd say you see yourself more as a recording artist than as a live performer?
You know, I mean, playing live is kind of a necessary, not necessarily evil, but it's just a necessary thing to get stuff out there. I mean, the band really likes to play live, but, you know, I don't feel like a phony, even though I am faking my way through it on some levels. I mean, I think the songs, you know, like to be heard. I love to play music. I love to practice. I love rehearsal. You know, the first or second time you play a song is fantastic. But, you know, I'm not just crazy about the live experience. I don't go see live bands unless it's somebody who's my good friend or, you know, someone who comes out of the woodworks, you know. I'd rather sit, you know, back at home, get very high and listen to records, you know. I'm a record
and so you
geek.
I would guess you imagine your audience doing the same kind of thing. So the people who are responding, who are falling in love with the Black Watch, you probably get it, as the artist, you get an image in your head of them listening to your CD or yeah. listening to your record, as opposed to meeting
there
you
in
at a
Cleveland,
show.
You know, or Athens, going like, you know, I get emails all the time. You know, I don't want to sound too self-important, but I get emails so like every other day, two or three people write to us like, please go on tour. And we all have great jobs. And the last thing that we did last year up the coast was so disastrous that, you know, you just think like, I would do it if, you know, somebody, if My Bloody Valentine wants to sweep us away and take us on tour, or the Cocteau Twins Reform or something, or whoever, you know, sure, we'll go, you know, in a second. But I have a great job teaching literature and film at Santa Monica College and you know, and everybody else has a decent enough job, and you'd have to pamper us a little bit.
And they want
you
to go
40 years old, so you know.
They want you to go on tour because they're familiar with your work
yeah.
from your CD, and that's like one more way to connect with you.
Sure, of course, and I'd love to again, but it'd have to be we'd have to have an opening slot. We'd have to have the last three agents. I mean, I don't think there's you could search me, but you don't want to. That I don't have any Shamrocks in my pocket. You know, like upcoming St. Paddy's Day, we've been very unlucky with booking agents and with labels. We've been burned by them and had horrible tours booked that just didn't go anywhere, and you know, so that we've had this refuge of just continuing to release an album and maybe an album and an EP a year, and get momentum that way to have just lots of records out and saturate the market and shoot ourselves in the collective foot that way as well. Sounds like I feel bad for me, but you know, I don't, because it's, you know, we've been able to produce so much.
Well, and as you mentioned before, it's important for you to not quite succeed completely in
yeah,
order for you to keep putting
yeah,
out
sure.
more work.
Yeah.
You know, so that you don't start to get lazy after
no,
all this time.
Why
don't we listen to another track from this new CD? What do you recommend?
You could play the title track, I Seen the Snow Queen, or a 6-minute kind of folktronic thing called Quartz Pink Cloud.
Well, we'll save that one for the end. We'll do the icing.
Okay, yeah,
song
play the title
first.
Track then.
All right, you're listening to Is Good on killradio.org. My guest is The Black Watch, myspace.com/TheBlackWatch. Stick around, we'll be right back.
Choke all the eaves. I've never met a liquor queen.
And we're back on Is Good on killradio.org, hanging out with John of the Black Watch. And this album comes out, you say, in June?
June 10th.
June 10th.
Yeah.
And let's see. There we go. Now, when you finish an album, is that kind of like, is that a very big cathartic thing? Do you take a break from songwriting, or do the songs continue to keep coming out of you?
It's a melancholic thing. It's a very sad thing.
Do you go through a postpartum depression, sort of?
Oh, precisely. Good term for it, John. Yeah, I don't enjoy finishing the thing. I mean, I don't have completion anxiety, obviously, but yeah, I don't like the time after something's finished at all. It's a sad time because all the excitement's in the making of it, and you know, the day that you get the product, to use an atrocious term, you know, in, that marks the death somehow of the record. I mean, don't want to tell that to the people working press and radio that we have now. It's just that's the birth of it. But yeah, you know, on to the next thing. And I'm always writing something.
So you're already working on new material for the next album.
Yeah, two or three things. You know, I'll have to be a little careful again not to repeat myself in my attempts to make the White Album. But yeah, you know, already some new stuff, because it's all about the actual recording of it, because we just love being in the studio. Never happier than layering guitars on a track where nothing existed before, you know.
So, you know, we talked a little bit about you've had a lot of experience with this band, a lot of positive and some negative experiences, you know, traveling, producing, performing. You know, because it's so different from a band that's just starting out and has these aspirations of like, oh, next week we're going to get picked up a label, we're going to be on the cover of Rolling Stone.
Yeah.
When you think about the future of the Black Watch, are you in a position now where you feel like, you know, you're happy with what you're doing, you're producing albums, you're distributing them on your own, or is there sort of a direction you want to be moving in?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I think I would be an even more intense masochist if I wasn't, you know, pretty content with, not to say complacent at all, there's a massive difference of content with, you know, what we've done. And there's a best of called Vary the Black Watch 1991 to now that's going to come out next year. And I think it's time to take, you know, about 20 tracks from the 13 CDs and do a retrospective sort of thing to go to, you know, to people like, you know, this documents, you know, what we've attempted to achieve. But I mean, it's always a ticklish issue to ask the artists like what they're all about and what they do. I mean, it's often the case that they're the last person who knows, you know, in terms of like, you know, what we call in literary criticism, the intentional fallacy of thinking just because an artist tries, you know, said like, what we really tried to do here is this, they're not a reliable source.
Right.
You know? So I don't know. You tell me. It's like, I got audited in 1997 because I file as an artist, but, you know, most of my income comes from being a professor. But, you know, I was audited and, you know, the accountant guy said, like, you're going to have to prove that you're an artist to the IRS. And I'm like, well, isn't that for the critics to decide, you know, or whatever. It's like, you know, it's always that. It's all, you know, the pundits out there, the people who are writing for the big takeover and Magnet. Like, it's down to them to, you know, to decide, or the listener, the people who don't care about reviews or whatever, just want to hear your latest catchy fuzzy pop song. So
from your perspective, all you can do is what you're doing. Keep
sure.
Writing music,
from my perspective,
records.
John, I'm an unbelievable musical genius. But once again, with the caveat that I'm the most deluded person, most likely, about me, and I probably suck, you know, or something.
Well,
so,
I think the fact that you actually, you know, waited almost 20 years to do a what is it called?
A best of. Yeah.
It shows at least a certain sense of integrity, because now I've noticed that there's a lot of bands releasing these best of albums after they've only had two releases.
For heaven's sake, the Libertines have a best of with two records under their belt.
The best of what? The last 3 years?
Yeah, the best
that's
of the
so
last
bizarre.
3 years. Good one.
Yeah. All right. Well, if you could, but honor us with just one more live song, if you can. What would
it's
you like
so
to play
odd
for
to
us?
Sing this early in the morning or this late in the morning, because I get up early. I'll do a track from the Hypnotizing Sea record called Inner City Garden. Thank you. quiet and swirling and swirling around. The ice cream trucks blare forth their music, hummingbirds and sparrows lose it, whirling and whirling around. It's the only place you can quit the race. Twinkle lights and sirens sounding in the nearby streets surrounding me and a car full of friends. Neighbor rage and couple warring, inner city gardens pouring rations of massive demand. It's the way to go. Don't you only know? In my inner city garden, 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 in my inner. Any city's harden us and eat us anymore. No, you always can repair that fallen any cares there. Mellow the mellow the more. It's the way to go. Don't you only know? Garden, in my inner city 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 garden.
You're listening to Is Good on killradio.org. My guest is The Black Watch. John, just before we take off,
I'd like to say thank you very much for having me in, you know, and give us a chance to get the new record out there a little bit or a lot, depending. And, you know, great show, John.
You're fantastic. Quite welcome, we'll and thank you very
in
much.
All the time now.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I wanted to ask you about the we talked a little bit about lyrics and how you know, they come in for you afterwards in,
sure,
this, in the song process. Are there certain themes or things you like to sing about and certain ways you like to sing about them? Are you a storyteller? Or are you talking about things that happened to you? Or is much material out there that there's no one thing?
My favorite poet is T.S. Eliot by far and away, and people who were influenced by him, like Ted Hughes or Philip Larkin a little bit. And, you know, Eliot takes on lots of characters and drives dramatic monologues and stuff. So I'm often inhabiting a person who might resemble me but isn't me. And I write about betrayal a lot because it's the only theme on some levels. Or about, you know, like E.E. Cummings-ish kind of stuff of just like the happy wonderfulness of the bummer of life, you know, or whatever. So, yeah, I'd say those are probably, you know, the themes. And, you know, I think that I started writing songs as consolations to other people as a way of being a consolation to myself, too, you know.
Because,
without art, like, life would be so tragic, to rephrase, you know, Nietzsche about music or whatever, you know. So it is some kind of consolation. And there are always messages to say, like, to other people, like, you can live through this, you can, for such a downer of a person, I'm actually very, you know, like, out to console people for their, you know, their,
but secretly
their
trying to explain it to yourself.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Try to work through it as well. And you know, there's a lot of carpe diem kind of things as well. There's a one song called The Tennis Playing Poet, Rudka said, all about, you know, how you have to just like take things as they come and go along with them. But that's a message to me too, because I'm the sort of person who's greatly impatient and a recovering control freak. So they're all sort of like, you know, ways of telling myself like, chill out, it'll be okay, you won't be devastated anymore, and, you know, et cetera, et cetera. And, you know, by extension to other people too.
Well, John, thanks again so much for coming in. Tell us once more when you have a CD release show coming
up. Yeah, we're playing Tex with our label mates, The Furious Seasons, on Saturday, June 14th at Tex in Echo Park across from the Echo. I think it's like 1911 West Sunset.
All right, cool. Well, we'll have to check that out. And
thank you very much.
Remind us once again, this comes out June 10th.
June 10th.
Icing the Snow Queen. And check out myspace.com/TheBlackWatch for all the latest up-to-date information. This will be available for download from myspace.com/thisisgoodisgoodmusic.com. And you've been listening to Is Good on killradio.org. We'll sign off with one more track here from Icing the Snow Queen called Quartz Pink Cloud. Thanks for tuning in.